Because I really believe if this, you know, the country we now live in, where God, where the atheists have just worked so hard, and the, you know, secular humanists, to strip God out of everything, to strip it down so even a child can't even read on the own, on his own school walls, do not steal, do not lie. You know, all these things that came over with the Mayflower Compact Pact when they wrote that thing. Mm-hmm. Good Lord have mercy. We're so far away from how this country originally started.
We cannot let their voices stifle our cause. This political crisis puts our head in their jaws. History is upon us. We've seen this before. We can never allow freedom to exit our shore. Good afternoon and welcome to the Trump Chronicle. I'm your host, Ray Brookstein. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to part two of our tandem approach to take a look at the Ten Commandments and how they relate to modern day society, both in our own country and globally as well. And I hope you were listening to part one with Terry Beatley. I was invited to a discussion of the five of the Ten Commandments, and now I get to change seats at the table and have Terry on to discuss the other five commandments so we can pull this whole thing together. Because we're talking about a way to live, we're talking about a common root that emerged from Judaism into Christianity through Christ. And I'm hoping that we can tie this whole thing together in the next hour. So let me start again with a brief introduction of my guest, Terry Beatley. Terry is an author, wife, mother, talk show host on America Out Loud, and that's just scratching the surface. Her show and book, What If We've Been Wrong, is really the perfect question to ask about our political, religious, and generally how we are living life in a very difficult, confusing world. In my opinion, she swims upstream against the flood of current events. She strikes at the dogma that we've been spoon-fed for decades. And as I said earlier in the last segment, it's interesting how her motto is shining light in dark places, and mine is don't hide your light under a bushel. And it's not coincidental. So welcome, Terry.
Hey, Ray. Thanks for being on today, or having me on today. And we definitely had fun the first hour, and so we're ready to roll.
Okay. Well, I'm going to tee this right up and talk about the other five commandments that we didn't address in the previous segment. But I just want to say something, that Moses did not come down Mount Sinai with the 10 suggestions, did he?
They were not suggestions, Ray. He was pretty dead serious about what God engraved on those two tablets.
Well, I want to start off with the first one that, you know, really gets my attention, and I'm sure, I know for a fact it's gotten yours in your, you know, your adult life, your writing life, your political life, and that is, thou shalt not murder. What's going on with this one, Terry?
I think we need to make a first distinction. You know, some people say do not kill, but that's not what the Hebrew language meant. It was do not murder. And there is a difference. But first, let's start off with, you know, human life. Human life is sacred, you know, it's sacred from its very beginning, you know, from the moment of conception. Or fertilization, which for the longest time, those two words used to mean the same thing. So from the moment of fertilization and or conception, okay? So because it involves the creative action of God, it's the one thing that God allows us to partake in, the creation of a new human being. And so that, and that builds a special relationship with God, the creator. And so we now know, you know, scientifically that life literally begins at the moment of conception. And so how do we honor God with that? Well, we honor the Lord with his commandment, do not murder, by not taking the life of an innocent human being. So that could be through euthanasia. You know, so now we have this big push for euthanasia. We have, I might ruffle some feathers here, but the in vitro fertilization, you know, when sometimes if the woman conceives, you know, whatever, all four of those babies, sadly, the doctors will say, well, look, if you want to make this work, we need to eliminate two out of the four. And I'm sorry, but, you know, God identifies that as murder. So even though somebody may want those, you know, they want children so badly, they're willing to kill two out of four, it doesn't make it right. Abortion, that's the huge thing, of course, in today's world is this quote, legal right of abortion. But abortion has killed, just in America, pushing now 61 million babies. And so God says, do not, you know, don't slay the innocent. Don't slay the righteous. And that includes the, those little tiny babies in the womb, you know, or the elderly, you know, the elderly who may be laid up in a nursing home bed. Their life has intrinsic worth, even if they have no utilitarian or utility, like they can't work anymore and produce anything. You know, some people who have a atheist worldview, they just look at that as, you know, these people are useless. But because they're made in the image and the likeness of God, that old person in the nursing home who will never be able to produce anything still has intrinsic worth, and their life should be honored and you know, and preserved. So that's the beginning.
That's very true and important, because we're talking about conception to natural death. That's called life. Period. End of story. And obviously, distinctions need to be made, and I thank you for that, you know, murder versus kill, because kill is a whole different concept, because you could be talking about protecting yourself, defending yourself, that results in somebody's death. And then we have armed conflicts that have happened over eons of time, where, you know, fighting forces have had to battle each other. You know, we talk about our own American history, you know, between the Civil War, World War One, Two, and right up through current. You know, somebody gets killed, but that's not what we're talking about here, is it? We're talking about items that could be preventable, right? Taking your own life, if you maybe you get the psychological help or intervention, you might not do it. Homicide, you know, the taking of somebody's life on purposeful. Okay, I'm not talking about accidental, but purposeful. Maybe if they were living God's word and things didn't get cockeyed in their brain, we'd see less murder. We'd see less killing in the cities of our country, which, you know, but I think that abortion is going to be a central issue in 2020 that separates this side from that side. And to me, it is as clear as a bell. If right. you believe in abortion, that's like, what is it? Is it Marxist? Is it leftist? I'm interested in what you know. I know you've written about, and you may be doing a movie about the life of Nathanson. Can you tell us about that? As we're talking abortion and infanticide, where did this come from?
The people who pushed abortion onto America and secured its at least temporary legality, they did it with a propaganda campaign, lies. They lied to the American public. The top three people were Dr. Bernard Nathanson, who interestingly was Jewish by ethnicity, I guess you'd say, but he had not an ounce of faith in God. The other two people he partnered with were Lawrence Leder and Betty Friedan, and they were both atheists as well. They were both Jewish as well. This is quite interesting to be talking to you at this time about this. And but they did not believe in God. Mm-hmm. So and by all indication, the two out of the three, Lawrence Leder, Betty Friedan, were communists. They had bought into a Marxist philosophy. And then in combination with the National Organization of Women, which was founded by Betty Friedan and Kate Millett. Kate Millett was a full-blown Marxist. She was a fallen-away Catholic. And she set out to unleash the Cultural Revolution onto America. And abortion was just one of the many, many things. So the national, it's called NARAL, Pro-Choice America. They set out with 8 points of propaganda to deceive the American public to believe the lie that abortion is women's health care. And
this was a setup.
I don't know if we have enough time to go over utter setup.
It was a setup.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and they took this.
I'm talking about audacious.
Mm-hmm. He knew it.
Yeah. Yeah. He flip flopped in about 6 months after celebrating Roe v. Wade. That was the beginning of his flip flop moment. He celebrated Roe v. Wade. He was all over the TV and radio interviews because he had been the medical face of trying to get abortion legalized. He was an OBGYN. So he was all over the media. And about 6 months after celebrating Roe v. Wade and in 1973, the hospital he was working at, where he was chief of obstetrics, where they were birthing babies, but they were also killing babies at this hospital. Well, the hospital rolls in a brand new technology called real-time ultrasound, which we're so used to today, but that was the first time Dr. Bernard Nathanson saw that little baby girl smiling, sucking her thumb, wiggling her toes, and he began his personal journey, and by the end of 1978, so just basically 5 years, he was 100% pro-life, including rape, incest, life of the mother. He knew there was no reason, Ray, that a baby would ever have to be butchered by abortion, including life of the mother, that if the mother, was in dire straits, by all means, get the baby out to save the mother's life, but you take the baby out of the womb with the intention of trying to save the baby's life, rip the baby's arms and legs and head off the torso. There's a big difference.
A picture is worth a thousand words. So I could just imagine the moment that they saw the ultrasound. It just changed the whole world and kind of changed my world when I saw how an actual abortion gets done. It's unbelievable. So that commandment, thou shalt not murder, is so key to like a civilized world. And I think when we talk about what's preventable, abortion is certainly preventable, that we shouldn't have to have even this argument. It's having a child isn't a convenience. And when there's two lives going on, it seems to me so selfish, and I hate to, on the soapbox, but if we believe that God was giving us this guidance, we should take this guidance because this is how you live a life, or the flip-flop, right? God said, and you asked me to look at Deuteronomy 28, I think, mm-hmm. where it goes through, all the blessings. The be fruitful and multiply, the fruit of the womb, and then all the other opposites. So it's quite dynamic, and this will be a subject that we could spend hours on. But I want to move to the second commandment that we're going to cover today with you, and that is, thou shalt not bear false witness. What are we talking about here?
Well, that's simply do not lie. Do not lie. But why is it so important? Because if we live in a society where truth is not spoken, say, in court, well, there can be no justice. Because if I have a charge against you and we both show up in court and you raise your hand and you swear to God to tell the truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God, but you could care less about that and you lie anyway, because whatever, you know, you're not under any oath because you don't believe in God anyway, or you're just going to call your own shots. There is no justice. So God knew that if people just run around and lie, that means I can lie with false advertising. If I have a business, I can false advertise to coerce you into buying my goods or services. So,
well, what about, you know, fake
false
news?
Witnesses?
Is fake, well, fake news? Well, is that filling? I mean, we're battling this all the time. Fake news.
Fake news is, that's right. It's lies. Lies about, yeah, and the biggest thing right now are the lies spewed at President Trump. So the truth must be central, you know, to maintain any kind of a civilized society.
So we're talking about honesty, even though,
yeah,
even though,
absolutely, and Ray, that's what I mean by even a non-believer. You know, you don't have to believe in God to recognize that lying is bad. That's, I mean, there's nothing, there's hardly anything can be just in a society that embraces lying. So, I mean, to me, it's just such common sense. But let's explore, though, just momentarily, because I know we don't have time to really get into the weeds, since we were just talking about abortion. And I kept saying there was an 8-point propaganda campaign,
yes,
that NARAL Pro-Choice America and Dr. Bernard Nathanson at the lead. Let me just tell you two of the lies. He was an OBGYN, and if he was speaking to a room full of reporters, most of the reporters happened to be young women who had just graduated from liberal universities. Most of them were probably not believing Christians or Jews. But that's even beside the point. He would lie to them. He would say, look, 1 million women a year are having back alley abortions, and 5,000 to 10,000 women a year are dying. Both of those statistics were grossly false. That on the high side, there were maybe, on the high side, 99,000 illegal abortions, not 1 million.
Wow.
And there were not 10,000 women dying. At the high side, there were about 200. And there were some years where it was only 30 women dying due to complications, due to illegal abortion. But he knew, and they had hired a PR firm, public relations firm, and the firm said, look, you know, you've got to roll out, you know, statistics that are going to move empathy in American hearts and minds. The other big thing he'd say is he would say 60% of Americans want abortion on demand legalized. That was a bald-faced lie. The real number was about 0.5% lies. And what's happened because of that? It is unbelievable. And 61 million American babies, half of those, mind you, so over 30 million baby girls, and I say that because they proclaim women's health care. That's the biggest bag of baloney, a bag of whatever you want to call it, that's ever been spewed onto the American public. Because if that's women's health care, well, my God, 30 million little baby girls who would have grown up to be women have lost their lives. It's a lie straight from hell.
Wow.
And why do I say that? Because, I mean, Jesus himself said, you know, choose life so you and your descendants may live. And he also, in, I think it was John 10:10, he's said that that Satan comes to kill, deceive, and destroy. Choose life so you and your descendants may live. I'm so tired of the lies, but I believe America will get to the point, and I think we're pretty close. More and more people, particularly like on this life issue, when they learn the truth, Ray, I think they're going to be a huge new swath of people are going to say no more. Have we not had enough hate, lies, and death?
Well, absolutely. And on that note, we're going to take a short break.
Patriots. Through his widely acclaimed poetry books, The Trump Chronicle, Ray Ray has preserved for us these historic events that have surrounded the first 2 years of the Trump presidency. His fervent and patriotic poems capture in real time what could have easily been lost or forgotten. The Trump Chronicle is available on Amazon or through the America Out Loud bookstore. Pick up a few of these memorable books for your library. They are a must-have for our MAGA movement. Let's support this important patriotic poet and show host so we can continue to read history through poetry.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends, with 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Okay, welcome back. I'm with Terry Beatley. We're covering the Ten Commandments. And Terry, we're at a very important one. It's thou shalt not steal. Let's talk to us about that.
Well, thou shalt not steal, you know, when I began looking into this, because it's like there's more to this thing than meets the eye. You know, we have a tendency to think of, you know, I should not go steal your clothes or your pen or your car. But that also includes other things as well, such as if we take somebody's life, we're stealing their life. So what I'm going to share here is that if people across the world could only apply one of the Ten Commandments to their life, if you ignored all the other commandments, this would be the one to at least seriously consider, because it takes into account, do not, if you lie, so if you bear false witness, that means you're stealing justice from somebody because you're lying about them. If do not steal includes do not covet. You know, if you're stealing, if you're coveting people's things, you know, their bicycle or what have you, and you desire that thing so much that you end up stealing it. How about adultery? You know, if you're an adulterer, you're stealing somebody's spouse. So it's actually very, very comprehensive. It's like an umbrella. You know, so it's in addition to do not steal. You know, you go to the grocery store, don't steal. Don't put that candy bar in your pocket because you're taking something that does not belong to you. So if you're taking somebody's life, taking somebody's spouse, taking somebody's belongings, you're stealing.
My God, that could conceivably be at the top of the commandments. I never thought of it like this. You've just clarified. And maybe for the audience, they can see how encompassing stealing is. This really is, I just never thought of it like this. Now, of course, in the absence of stealing, in other words, when we have enough bounty, do we need all of the bounty, Terry?
No, we're in a position where we can share, where we can bless other people. And it doesn't take the government, and it shouldn't take the government commandeering our money to go bless somebody else in need. That should really come from the heart through charity. And when I say charity, this is not like government mandating charity, because then it's confiscation. It's no longer charity. But God tells us to go bless other people. So it's hard to bless other people though when you're stealing their property. And I think the other important thing too is private property is a fundamental plank in the Bible, in the Old Testament, that we have to be able to own our own private property. And why is that? And it's because if I can't own my own property, then anybody can come behind me. Like if I have sweat and equity and I've just built my house, literally, you know, I've built my house. I'm my own builder, just like they used to do, you know, in yesteryear. But if somebody can come behind me, a lazy person, and go steal my private property, take it from me. Like I have no ownership. I have no right to own the property. This is exactly what happened in Cuba and Venezuela. You know, not that far from the United States of America. It's what happened in Russia, communist Russia, Soviet Union.
So we're really talking about socialism. How many people really look at socialism as stealing? It's stealing wealth. It's stealing. Well, that makes two of us. But how many people really tie those themes together? when people come through the border illegally, in effect, they're stealing from our country. They're stealing justice from our country. So really, for those on the left that want an open border, when was the last time they looked at it as theft? And this is serious.
Let's bring it down to an everyday example, Ray, because I think people are so, I don't know what the right word would be, dumbed down or desensitized or something. So let's just, you know, all you ladies out there who grocery shop every week, you're standing in line. It's the only cash register open. And they're like, say, seven people in line, and you're the second person, and that person has 500 groceries. And then the line right next to you, they open up that cash register, and the cashier, pardon me, recognizes, and she nods at you, and she says, come on over, we're opening up this cash register. But the person behind you beats you there first. Everybody feels the same. Everybody feels the same. So I just challenge people that the people who are coming in from this leaky border that we have, they're busting in front of the line. All these people who are legally in line, they're legally trying to enter the United States and do it the right way. No, these other people are stealing their way into line. In fact, they don't even stand in line. They just come there. But the reason I gave the example is everybody knows what that feels like, right?
Yes, that's very true. It really makes your blood boil. And, you know, I'm thinking along a different tact, but it all comes down to the same thing of stealing. And I'm talking about everyday conversations that we have with people. Because a lot of times, people just want to talk. And they don't allow the other person's point of view, or they don't allow people to enter into the conversation. So, in effect, they're stealing the other people's time to express themselves. So even everyday conversations come back to the same thing. I don't know whether it's a matter of patience and how this plays into it, or just being open that, you know, when your turn, it's like a walkie-talkie. I express myself, the person should be listening, and then they have their chance. Now, when they're talking, if I'm thinking about the sky is blue and what I have to do 2 hours from now, in effect, because I'm not engaged at that moment, I'm literally stealing from that person's chance to express themselves. I mean, that's something that happens every day. And I think that listening and non-listening is a form of theft. Does that ring true?
It happens.
Go ahead.
Well, right then, I was just thinking about people who gossip. I mean, you're stealing the reputation of somebody. You know, libel. The biggest thing, gossip. Just people who gossip about other people, and you have no foundation to be saying what you're saying. You're literally stealing the person's reputation. And I guess there are other ways as well. I mean,
fibs and half-truths, or just not telling somebody what's on their mind, you know, or not really being direct. It gets into this whole area of political correctness where basically we're not allowed to express ourselves anymore. So it goes into
This one? Well, I just thought of one more in the day and age of the internet, you know, with, because I remember talking with my kids about it when they were little, downloading music. You know, somebody wrote that song and you should go pay the whatever it is, $2.99 or $8, I never buy music, but whatever the cost is of that music, you know, they should pay whatever it is, not just download it for free. And I know this has been a big war going on, you know, with movies and with music, but that is somebody's property. What do you call it? Like intellectual property. So to not compensate, that would be like somebody downloading my book that it took me a year and a half to write, and I just download it for free and steal it And it's like, come on, people. It's like a $9.99 ebook. Can't you just pay $9.99 instead of just get it for free and steal it?
Yeah. I know. It's like, it's the same thing with my poetry books. I can put out what's called an EPUB, P-U-B, and I could literally email my book to somebody, but I can't control what they do with that. They could, in effect, spread it out, and this is what happens. So we're seeing theft, but we're also seeing this political theft where the progressives want to take away our cars, want to take away our cattle. I mean, that's very biblical, isn't it? Because they talk about, you know, the donkeys and the asses, and that's our property. But there's a concept of charity here and sharing that's really the opposite of stealing, isn't it? In other words, I know from Judaic history that when you own a field and you are, let's say you're growing corn on that field, 10% of that field is technically not yours. It's for the community who's hungry. They could go onto that 10% of your land, set up a tent, eat from those goods. And that 10% is a magical number, isn't it? Because that's like almost like a tithe, isn't it, Terry? Not knowing too much about how a church functions, but is there a tie-in here with tithing and charity and having a bounty that hasn't been stolen?
Right. And it's, yeah, it's charity of heart, you know, and to love thy neighbor, you know, as you love yourself. And so in terms of a field, you know, the people in the, I was thinking right then of a person I talked to recently, and it's an elderly man, and he was reflecting on what it was like to grow up in the country and to love thy neighbor. And so they would, his father told him to, I think it was like every Saturday, to take the surplus and to take it down to the different neighbors who were poorer than they were. None of the people were wealthy, but like you said, you had a bounty. So they had a bounty of sweet potatoes or a bounty of corn. And his job was, it was an unpaid job. But as his father's son, his job was to go and bless other people with the bounty. And then they would open up their field as well. And I was thinking of the way my husband grew up there every year. I started dating him, I think, when I was, 16 or 17. And one of the neighbors, you know, every year, spring or summertime, we had free access to a certain part of their cornfield. Yes. And we could pick as much corn as we wanted to and, you know, chop it off and freeze it and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I think if it comes back to love, if we return to loving thy neighbor, you know, we're not going to be thinking about stealing from thy neighbor.
No. I mean, it sort of sets things straight. I mean, we're looking at such lawlessness in our country. I mean, we're looking at sanctuary cities. We're looking at homelessness. We're looking at theft of services. We're looking at, you know, destruction, drug abuse, human trafficking. Just the thought of stealing a human being, it's just mind-boggling. Or stealing a life, as we were talking about infanticide and abortion. It's all about theft of the beautiful things in life. If we could just reverse some of this, we would live a more joyful life where we're willing to share the bounty of what we think and what we've been successful at. And people have to be really starting to love their neighbor. You're right.
Right. Well, I think the other thing to recognize, which is vitally important, is that ethics are really no longer taught anymore. You take ethics at Harvard, you know, which was a Christian-based school, no longer. Harvard's not a Christian-based school. Or you look at Princeton, business ethics, non-existent. And thus you have, you know, the tragedies of yesteryear, you know, and you've seen the huge business debacles, these, like the, what's his name, Bernie Madoff. Yes, Bernie Madoff, ripping off thousands of people stealing everything they had in the name of his own wealth. And now, he, of course, justice was served finally. He's behind bars for the rest of his life. But sadly, his son committed suicide.
Yes.
And his wife is basically left with nothing, as well as the other. It's just so sad. But so that's what happens when there's no ethics. That whole Enron debacle, same kind of thing. And then when all the whatever those financial securities were, they were all bundled investments, and you know that big, you know, bust that happened on whatever it was 15 years ago or something, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. It all comes back to ethics. Those people knew that those securities would one day go belly up. And sure enough, that day came. Where are the ethics? So if we just return, even for an atheist, and I keep going back to that, because I really believe if this, the, you know, the country we now live in, where God, where the atheists have just worked so hard, and the, you know, secular humanists, to strip God out of everything, to strip it down so even a child can't even read on the own, on his own school walls, do not steal, do not lie. You know, all these things that came over with the Mayflower Compact Pact when they wrote that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Good Lord have mercy. We're so far away from how this country originally started.
I mean, think about education. We're stealing mm-hmm. our children's education by indoctrinating them with leftist progressive, taking God out of the school. You said in the first segment that it used to be you went to school and the Ten Commandments was on the board. Where mm-hmm. have we gone wrong, Terry? We are going so far off the chart.
Right.
And this is the choice we have to make in 2020. Maybe they should change it. Do we want to go with the theft party or the bounty party? Because that's what it's really come down to.
That's actually a really good description, Ray. And I think it's important for our listeners today. And I encourage them to go onto YouTube and look this up. The Democrat Party at the 2012 DNC convention, so the Democrat National Party convention, just type it in. I'm pretty sure it's 2012. DNC convention, and the words to search would be remove God, and it'll pop up. You will see the Democrat Party at their DNC convention vote. They take a vote, and it's actually a Protestant minister who is saying that he's making a motion to have God, or to keep God in the platform of the Democrat Party. So they take a verbal vote, and they have to do it three times. And you just got to watch this thing, because you will watch the Democrat Party roar, these people by the thousands roar, that they do not want God in the platform. And then the guy on stage, the director of the DNC, I don't know what his name was, but he's so shocked at what he's hearing, he asks for the verbal vote to come again. And it happens again. It's so clear. If you had a monitor, I mean, the nays, the people do not want God in the platform. And then he's so shocked, somebody comes and whispers in his ear or whatever. If I'm not mistaken, he does it again. And against the volume, I mean, you can tell. I mean, it's the yays got a little bit louder, but the nays were still louder. But he overruled them, which was a lie. He lied right there on stage. And they kept God in the platform, but it was against the will of the people. Okay? So everybody needs to see this, because we're now facing one political party that wants to literally remove God from everything. And in fact, they want to even put boys and girls showers in the public school system, right? Because if you feel like a girl that day, just let them on in there. Okay. Regardless of how God designed that body, you know, biological boy. So we're facing a huge monster that if we don't get our head out of the sand to better understand why those Ten Commandments are so important, we'll lose our country. We'll lose our freedom.
On that note, we're going to take a short break.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Okay, welcome back. I'm with Terry Beatley, and we're moving through the Ten Commandments and what it means in everyday life and leaving a more joyous life. So we basically covered everything but one, Terry. We're going to move into not take the name of the Lord in vain. So we're talking about what we say, what we do, political correctness, cursing. Talk to me about this.
Sure. That's a pretty short one. It's basically, if you go back to the original Hebrew, they wrote, you know, do not carry the name thy Lord thy God in vain. Don't misuse God's name. And now let's put skin on this. You know, is it just cussing? Well, absolutely. It includes, you know, God this or God that, and you're speaking out in anger or what have you. But, you know, what we want to do is honor the name of the Lord. So what this is really getting at is that people who claim to honor God and then they misuse and they carry the name of God and it hurts other people and it shames the Lord, this is what it's getting at. So let me give a couple examples. So the Muslims, the Islamists, who chop off people's head in the name of Allah. Now, I think it's important to make known, they're not worshiping the same God, you know, Jewish people are and Christians are. I think that's very, very important to understand. But they're doing it in the name of, quote, God, their Allah. And so for anybody, sadly, to think that they're worshiping the same God Jewish people and Christians are, and they're doing it in the name of their God, again, it's coming back to misusing the name of God. But I just want to make it clear that Muslims are not worshiping the same God of the Bible, the Old and the New Testament. But let's take the Catholic priests who, granted, it's the minority, okay? I don't want to paint this like it's the majority, but the minority
of children.
The treatment of children, mm-hmm. Yeah. How they convince these little boys and girls to do sexual acts with them, convincing them that it's okay and God will bless you for this and what, just anything like that, that perversion, you know, that is misusing the name of God. And then, you know, there are plenty of Protestant ministers out there where the same kind of thing, they misuse the name of God, convince women to have affairs with them or whatever, the list goes on and on. So that's what, you know, in terms of do not misuse, do not carry the name of thy God in vain. Don't misuse it.
Unbelievable. You know, Terry, I want to turn this. I think we've pretty much covered the Ten Commandments, and we both realize how encompassing they are and yet how simple they are to follow. It doesn't take that much. It's not complicated. And maybe that's what God was trying to tell us, that it doesn't have to be a complex life. It could be a simple life of communicating, loving your neighbor, having ethics, holding on to your morality, and just living those Ten Commandments each and every day. But, you know, there's the flip side, those that don't. And which leads us into forgiveness, salvation, and redemption. I want to talk a little about salvation. You know, Judaism and Christianity do convert, you know, divert in certain ways, but I think it all leads to the same place. In Judaism, we talk about the Book of Life, and every year on Yom Kippur, which is the Day of Atonement, where we atone for our sins throughout the course of the year, not just sins of action, but also sins of thought, and really trying to clear the slate at least once a year. Now, in the Catholic Church, you get to do a confession each week if you want, where you confess. So what are we to make of heaven and the Book of Life and also Satan in this mix?
Wow, that's a big loaded question. But being a Catholic woman, I do want to point out one thing. You can literally go to Mass 7 days a week, and there is the penitential prayer, and you literally put your hand over your heart, and you say, you know, through my fault, through my fault, through my most grievous fault. And so literally every day, I mean, and sometimes it can just be a bad thought. You know, you woke up that morning, you look at your spouse, and you're like, ugh. You know, so the thoughts, you know, and what, you know, in my thoughts, what I've done and what I failed to do. That's the other thing. You know, what I've failed to do, you know, have I raised my children to the best that I possibly could, you know? Okay, let's see. Where does Christ fit into all this? I mean, boy, that's a big one. I know we're going to run out of time, but at the end of the day, this is what it is. God created the world. God creates life. Through an original sin with Adam and Eve, man fell. We have a fallen nature. We sin. We have a propensity to lie, to cheat, to steal, to kill, to whatever. You know, we're fallen people. Mm. And that comes from the original fall. I mean, you just look at Adam and Eve and then Cain and Abel and all that. And then the problem is it's that creates a problem because of our fallen nature. We hurt people. We hurt ourselves, and then we end up hurting other people. So what's the solution? Well, you know, God sent his son, and, you know, God in human form, Jesus Christ, who was born and died for our sins. So he bridges that gap. He bridges this discord between us and God, that big divide, sin. And Jesus came and took all of the sins on himself, past, present, and future. And you know, people, there are people listening are like, oh, yeah, that's hocus pocus. What do you mean? No, if you dig into the history, you dig into the recorded history, and I'm talking about not just give yourself 5 minutes to study, but I mean, really get into it. It's amazing, the history. It's proven he was seen over and over by hundreds and hundreds of people, risen from the dead. But here's the other astounding thing is, in addition to all that, it's what Jesus Christ has done for people here and now to meet people. Like, as an example, Dr. Bernard Nathanson, as I was sharing earlier, he was America's abortion king. He taught Planned Parenthood, Ray, how to kill babies. And then when he wrapped his head around what he had actually done after real-time ultrasound, he spent the 1980s literally contemplating suicide. He couldn't get rid of the yuck. And in fact, he had not participated in Judaism for years, but he went back to the rabbi. He found even the rabbi's answers insufficient. He couldn't figure out how to get the yuck off of him. He tried drugs. He tried New Age. He tried all this. And then finally, he crossed paths with a priest who taught him about the love and mercy of Jesus Christ, who Jesus was. And bam, it took 5 years. But Dr. Nathanson, on December 8th, 1996, which interestingly is the feast day of the Immaculate Conception, a Jewish mother of Jesus Christ, Mary, you know, she was as Jewish could be. And he was received into the Catholic Church on December 8, 1996. He became a believer, and then he spent the rest of his life until 2011 trying to expose the lies that he had told and to lift up the name of Jesus Christ and redemption. Okay, and that's part of the restoration. So he was a restored human being.
Amazing. Terry, I want to turn, because we're talking about this, to the Hosea Initiative. In the time we have remaining, please tell us about the Hosea Initiative.
Oh, a Hosea Initiative is an educational organization dedicated to, you know, our vision is an America where every baby is welcomed and protected by the law. So that's the vision. But our mission is to educate and to restore and unify America around a culture of life ethic by fulfilling the promise I made to Dr. Bernard Nathanson. And the promise I made him, which was to teach America how he deceived our country with lies and propaganda, teach the history of all this stuff, and then show people a better way. There's a better way than killing children in the womb. Hmm. Okay, because when you kill a child in the womb, and this is not meant to condemn anybody, you know, who either did that or they participated in some way or they drove a friend to an abortion, you know, center. But I think the important thing just to kind of tie this back into the Ten Commandments, might not be able to wrap them into all of them, but for the abortion industry is based on lies. Satan comes to kill, deceive, and destroy. Dr. Nathanson lied to everybody that abortion is women's health care, that it kills human life. God says do not kill. God says do not lie. You know, and then people who do this, sadly, they're coveting something that in their mind they think they really want. They want that life without a baby. They don't want to be a mom or a dad at that moment. Well, guess what? They're already a mom and dad, but they're coveting so much something that, and they're willing literally to kill somebody to get there. And then sadly, this whole industry, it supports adultery. I mean, it's sad, but I mean, you know, with a whole lot of sex, eventually comes a baby. Usually that's how that works. And then the last part that I thought of, that I just penciled down is, you know, hypothetically, you know, a 17-year-old young woman aborts her baby. Well, she's not even honoring her own mother and father because she's stripping them of the honor of being grandparents.
Oh, my God.
And I'm sure we could tie into probably all of the Ten Commandments. So that, I'm just saying that this world would be a much better place if we would just honor the Ten. Even if you can't handle 10, honor 5 out of the 10 and watch what happens to the world.
Oh, my God. That's wonderful. And finally, before we wrap, I want to ask you about your book, What If We've Been Wrong? Just in a minute or two, just encapsulate, you know, what brought you to write that book and whether it ties into all of this discussion we've had over these 2 hours.
Oh, well, it does tie into a lot of it. But the reason I wrote the book is the promise I made to Dr. Nathanson when he was 83, terminally ill with cancer. He was 100% unequivocally pro-life, and he desperately grieved this culture of death he was leaving behind. And at that point, it was like 52 million dead babies. Now we've got pushing 61 million. And at the end of the interview, I said, Dr. Nathanson, if you have a message for America, tell me what it is. And I promise you I'll deliver it across our country. And he said, yes, teach the strategy of how he deceived our country. And then he said, tell America that the co-founder of NARAL, Pro-Choice America, says to love one another. Abortion is not love. Stop the killing. The world needs more love. And I'm all about love now. And I reached over and I shook his hand and I promised him I would get this job done. Here's my goal. By November 2020, I want to see America educated. And we have the big book, What If We've Been Wrong? Then we've got this little 4x6-inch little pocket little fact check booklet called Who Was America's Abortion King? In this little booklet that only costs, I think it's $2.50, we literally teach the 8-point strategy. We've got curriculum, so just know that there's an entire ministry. I speak all over the country. We're going to be rolling out all sorts of content on social media, and I'm working on 2 feature films. Wow. So God's going to have his way. Yeah, it's really awesome.
Terry, I got to tell you, This has been an awesome 2 hours. I hope the listeners enjoy this. You are something special. And I just want to thank you on my end because, you know, like I said at the beginning of your show, I'm used to listening to your shows, but to actually participate with you for a few hours is really something special. So I want to thank you for that. And kind of in wrapping up, you know, Malcolm has really been feverishly building out just a wonderful platform for all of us, Terry, myself, and there's so many others. I would encourage you all to go to America Out Loud and take a look at the media player. Click on that and you can search everything that's on the platform. It's all connected. All of the people who write, all of the people who make commentary, my poetry, essays, Terry's outstanding podcast, it's all there. Just take some time, explore the site, and you're going to be amazed because it's all about the out loud truth. And I guess, Terry, since, you know, you did the first segment, I'm completing the second segment, but I want to give you the honor of a final thought.
Well, I appreciate that. And my final thought would be to give God a chance. Just give him a chance. And, you know, he gave us his son, Jesus Christ, and Jesus has a mother. And so what I tell people, that mother is for everybody, and just ask her to reveal her son to you and watch what happens.
Amen, Terry. And with that, love Ray Ray and a poem.